Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Bam, 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 bam. Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 of the Fan. I'm JD Bunkus. I got my buddy Sam McKee with me today. And Blake Murphy joins us now. So I just played the interview I did with Daniel Ricciardo. I got to admit something, you guys. Like, so we joked about, so we had Peter Forsberg and Daniel Ricciardo today. No big deal. The show is pretty, it's a small time show. It's just a, you know, you're a very humble country. You know, some people leave the show to go do Blue Jays Talk Plus because they think they're better than the show and they think that they have aspirations beyond it. And then do Daniele and I get spiteful and book Peter Forsberg and Daniel Ricciardo to try and show people what they're missing? Yes, we do. Unequivocally, yes.
Obvious when the first day I wasn't on the show, you had Russell Martin. It's very clearly what the plan is here.
No, dude. Blake left the show, and it's like in a relationship where he's like, now I'm working out, you know? Now you see your ex, and she's just, all of a sudden, she's got an F45 membership. That's me. Blake left the show, and I was just there.
Looking back, the first show without Blake was Stan Van Gundy and Russell Martin. So definitely at F45 right now.
Yeah. Fill in the blank.
The Orange Theory.
Fill in the blank. Yeah. Yeah, the Orange Theory was strong that day. My friends. Okay, so we were joking earlier, Blake, about how Peter Forsberg, you get nervous with guests like that because if you make a huge mistake, it's going to be remembered because it's such a legend, right? If you're our age, if you're in our age group, Peter Forsberg is as legendary as it gets. Truly. Like, yes. That guy fits in a very special class of there's no criticism, right? There's nothing you say. Imagine someone had a hot take that was like, Peter Forsberg's overrated. You'd go, okay, buddy.
Yeah.
Right on. All right. Go sit down. By the way, I have a hot take about Teo for you later. So just so you know, I spun one out earlier. So you,
all right.
That remind me to give you that.
Yeah. But, I like that the one person who has that Peter Forsberg take is probably like, yeah, well, 17 games with Nashville weren't that impressive. Yeah,
exactly. Exactly.
He's also got the thing where he's like, he's also very handsome.
Yeah,
and I know you did an audio interview, but I'd imagine
I could hear the handsome too.
Yeah, I could hear,
buddy. I could. There was two things in that interview that I didn't need to see, that I knew existed. One was that his watch was heavy and whatever watch he was wearing.
He bought it in Zurich.
Yeah, he had a sick Zurich watch. As he grabbed the steering wheel, the sun was shining off of Peter Forsberg's watch in Zurich. The sun shines well off of him. Two is I could feel his handsome through the phone. Three is McKee and I were joking about this earlier, but he's such a class A1 descendant of Vikings. Like someone that looks exactly like Peter Forsberg rolled over a hill like hundreds of years ago, and some peasant in his hut was like, oh no. Like, you know, oh no.
You wonder it's like, okay, well, how do you get from the Viking era of stuff to like modern Scandinavia? It's like, oh yeah, there was a guy that looked like Peter Forsberg and was like, no, let's evolve this. Let's move this forward.
Yeah, 100%.
Where I was going with
this long winded. By the way, this insider, Blake Murphy, Blake Murphy's the insider. This insider is brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. Where I was going with this long-ass-winded rant is that I was more nervous for Ricciardo, not because Ricciardo is a name, but because F1 fans... They're the first people to criticize you whenever you do an interview with an F1 person. They go, why didn't you ask him about the engine? And I go, because I don't know anything about that. Okay? You guys know about that. So I actually need some positive reinforcement from people to be telling me how that went. But it was okay. It did go well. But I want to talk to you guys about F1 before we jump into the NBA Finals. And just that, how big do you think this weekend is in terms of judging the barometer of staying power with F1?
Yeah, I think it's huge, and I think you don't have to look much further than Ailish not being on the Yeah, but you don't have to look much further than Eilish not being on the show today, right? Because she's going to Montreal for the weekend. And I've already started to see a bunch of Instagram posts from people who are heading down for the weekend. I think it's big. I think as interested as you can get in a Netflix show and the odd race on television, there's always going to be an extra level of connectivity you can make with sports from the live viewing experience. And no, not everyone can go to that, but I do think there's an element of it's cool to have it in your own backyard. It's cool to have a Canadian Grand Prix, and it's going to be cool to hear from people you know who went and made a whole weekend of it and stuff. So in terms of Canada, like F1 big picture, it's just the race. But in Canada, this is huge. Like, I think this has the potential to continue this growing from, you know, a couple years ago, a fringe thing, to now one of the fastest rising ratings machines, to now being like the Canadian Grand Prix is right there with like the Rogers Cup as something that Canadian sports fans are putting on their calendar every summer. Mm.
Sam, are you with that?
Yeah, I mean, the Grand Prix could be an own sound this weekend, and I wouldn't go. I've just completely fallen out of love with the F1. I couldn't care less. I guess it's important, but I feel like the malaise is kind of set in. No, like my Twitter feed on Sunday and Saturday mornings used to be pretty F1-y, and now it's just like Hugh Burrell still tweeting about it, who like loved it since he was a kid. So I don't know. Like, I don't think
it's also
really,
the lull of the season,
much.
Right? Like,
yeah,
Lewis
guess.
isn't performing that well. Yeah. It's not late enough to really be doing the standings watch quite yet.
I pretended to like it. I was lying to myself for multiple.
No, I love it. Like, I love it to the point where I'm genuinely excited for this weekend to wake up and watch it. Like, it's my number one. Nah, it's not true. I'm more excited.
You don't have to wake up.
Weekend.
It'll probably be in the afternoon. It's in Montreal.
Yeah, it's true. But my number one thing is still the hockey, because this matchup is just incredible. And I actually had a thought of yesterday when they were running one of the commercials for the game. I had one of those. This matchup's so sexy, the Stanley Cup Finals, so sexy that I had the, oh, I hate that there's an extra day. I can't wait till Saturday to watch this game. So definitely that. But this is right there. It's 2:00 on Saturday. I can't wait to watch it. And why I think it is kind of that tipping moment is, like, Blake, you just made a lot of really good points about it, is that there's a different, like, this is kind of it becoming a reality. And I believe this is more of a, not to be Mr. Toronto here, but I think this is a Toronto thing a little bit, where it's all about events in Toronto, right? People are jealous of people who go to events. It's like, you know, that's so much of like Instagram culture, social media culture, what you go to. And if it's a hit and people go to this thing and it becomes like a sports fan pilgrimage place, I could see this becoming a massive event every year beyond Montreal. Like, obviously, it's huge in Montreal, right? It's huge there. It's a big part of the F1 circuit. F1 fans already know it. This is not a segment for actual hardcore F1 fans. Like, you guys are already in the club. We're talking about those of us that became fans through the Netflix show and now care about F1. This is big. And if this weekend's a hit and it's a smash success and there's an interesting race, it's a compelling race, I do think that it's going to create a little bit more staying power with the sport in this country with the casuals. But you touched on something with that lull in the season, Blake. I think F1, they got to be choked. They're not choked because they're billionaires and they don't care. Like, they're just above it all. They just don't. But if I was the director of fan engagement in North America, you would be choked about this. You had this incredible Lewis versus Max season, Red Bull versus Mercedes season, and we leave the last drive to survive with Toto going, the thing on our box is that's a horrible Toto. That was a bad Toto. I do a better Toto. I need a little bit more Toto warm up. But he's like, everyone's a target. Everyone's a target. We are going to target everyone. And then Toto stinks this year, and Mercedes sucks, and Lewis is crying about his back. And yeah, he's hurt, fine. But George Russell's ahead of him in the standings. Not a really good look. Mercedes is out of it this year. We got all hyped up and excited for Ferrari, but it's just Red Bull domination. Red Bull's kicking ass this year to the point where, like, there's nobody else in the field. We thought it'd be a little bit more competitive. It's just, it's not nearly as compelling. You had this incredible series last year, this incredible season last year, And if you're a casual, which I am, like I'm hands up, I'm putting the casual flag up. All right. I watch all the races and I care now, but I'm still a casual. It's just, it's not, you can't sell domination this way to North American sports fans without being like long time invested sports fans where you can like put the dynasty in a historical context.
Yeah, especially coming off of, like you said at the start there, the 1v1 rivalry that kind of hooked a lot of people, right? It's like there's a lot of season left. This is round 9 of 22. Things could change, but the way it looks right now is that Max's primary competition in the driver standings is his own teammate, and the Constructors is going to be wrapped up two-thirds of the way through the season, and this isn't a sport that has playoffs, right? So if the table's dead midway through the season, then all you're looking at really is like, well, can you do something historical in the driver standings or the constructor standings? And I don't, like you said, I don't, like me as a casual that's new to it, that's not, I don't have the context.
Like, what are you glomming on to?
Yeah, I don't have the context to put that in, and I'm not a savvy enough race fan yet to just like appreciate what dominance looks like on the track week to week. So I get it. Yep. We need more of a hook. What you need is you need someone a little further down the standings to take this race this weekend or take the next race and start to build off of that and push those two Red Bull guys, whether it's Charles or you know, I don't know if Russell has that in him or a late Lewis push or whatever, but someone's got to kind of shoot up the – someone's got to put some pressure on the two Red Bull guys at the top.
Dude, that's it. That's it. And it's just we need something. We need a story. And – I don't think that for a Canadian sports fan, selling them on, well, this is Max's continued run as one of the greatest of all time is enough. Like, it's just, it's not. It's just, it's not enough.
Too early.
And so, yeah, it's too early. It's not, he's not, first of all, too, he's doesn't want to be involved in any media stuff, so you don't even hear from him. Like, I don't know. I just, there's something lacking there a little bit. So, yeah, this weekend was huge because it's an experience, so people being involved in the experience, this is a big one in terms of sticking with F1. Okay, NBA Finals finished yesterday before we get into Blue Jays, because, yeah, we got a lot of time. We got the whole hour with Blake, all right? We don't need to panic. We don't need to freak out. Nobody freak out. Everybody just chill. We got lost.
Not gonna do what everyone thinks I'm gonna do.
You guys are done talking about F1. Thank God, finally.
Oh, you're brutal. You know what? This
guy, you don't bury us. This is why you're behind the glass, Sam. This is why you're behind the glass. JD cares about something. You don't bury it. You put it over.
This is why you're behind the glass is an all-time slap. That's a great slap. I just pictured him like we're tapping on it, like trying to get his attention,
boom,
like a little kitten roasted in a pet store, like tap tap tap. Yeah, yeah. This guy Sammy spent like $1 billion on a Mercedes hat. He was the all-time like
for Allie, you know, because she pretended to like it just like I did.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, Sam's fiance definitely pretends a little bit much about like how into F1 she is. Yeah. And then I always text her during the F1 races being like, hey, this is a fun race. And she's always like, I'm out rock climbing. I'm like, you're
she's like, I'm riding my bike.
Yeah, exactly. She never watches the races. No. But she gets mad if you make fun of Lewis Hamilton in front of her. It's very weird. She's never seen him race, but she's like a huge fan of Lewis Hamilton. She's never seen him once outside of the series. Has no clue what his car looks like, but huge fan. You cannot heckle her. Okay, so yeah, NBA Finals last night. This is the conversation we were having earlier. And we'll get into Steph and we'll get into the Warriors piece of this, but I was reluctant to criticize the Celtics because Tatum is 24 and Brown is 25, but they were the better team. Like, I think that they are the better team, and they no-showed at home in an NBA Finals elimination game and quit in the first quarter. How are you viewing them moving forward here? Like, how much does what just happened last night impact the way you feel about that Celtics team?
It's tough because you can do the whole you got to learn how to win thing, and the Warriors championship experience wins out in a close series like that. And I certainly think there were stretches where you saw that benefit for Golden State. On the Boston side, like
fourth quarter when Boston made it close and they just kept being like, no. That was championship pedigree.
And I know Steve Kerr, there are some times where it's like, well, yeah, look at the roster. He's coaching or whatever. He had a tremendous coaching performance in this series. So this is not to take any credit away from Golden State, but this is like Boston's not new here. They're young in age, but this is their fourth time with this core going to the conference finals or deeper. They are past the point now where you're supposed to be learning how to win. And yes, a championship is different, but you've done three round playoff runs multiple times before. You know what it takes to get all the way there. And I thought that that helped them in the Milwaukee and Miami series. What this takes. You've had your back against the wall. You've led a team back in a series before. You've been through all that. It's different against the Warriors. And I know I mentioned four conference finals and Tatum's only been a part of three of those. But I was pretty surprised. I was pretty surprised throughout the series at the number of like 7 and 8 minute stretches where they were just completely on tilt. And it was, you know, you get one bad whistle and it's turnover, 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 or you can't get a stop. So it's flop, flop, flop. I thought they lost the plot a couple times. And otherwise a terrific Ime Udoka coaching performance throughout the playoffs. But yeah, it was disappointing. Now looking forward, I think you got to still be pretty confident with where Boston's at. You mentioned the age of their core pieces, and I don't think you're downgrading Tatum necessarily from that fringe, that kind of 9 to 15 range of the league. Brown has some things to work on. Robert Williams continues to get better if he could stay healthy. The big
Robert
question
Williams impressed me in that game.
Yeah, he was great, and throughout the series, he was kind of pretty consistently like. They won his minutes, and they lost when he wasn't on the floor, and he couldn't give them more because of the knee, but we'll see. And then so the things for Boston that you have to answer are, okay, was Derek White just a better fit than Josh Richardson, or can he be a guy? And then what do you do if this is it for Al Horford at this level? Because Al Horford had a couple bad moments in that series, but he was also like the guy – like he was their Spezza as like the guy playing beyond – what you can expect from a 36-year-old at the end of a playoff run. Like you, Al Horford has no business trying to drag your team back into games. And he was. So if at age 37, he's not able to do that anymore, how are you filling that spot? So, but they've got Tatum and Brown and Smart. They're in a pretty good spot, big picture.
Couple things, Blake, about first of all, the turnovers. And then we were talking about that earlier, but the carelessness that they played with last night, and I know that they have turnover issues, and they talked.
How do you know that though? How do you know that again? Like credit to the Warriors,
carelessness
they turned
was nuts.
The team over. But how do you know that as a group that the magic number that everyone's talking about with your turnovers, and then go into an elimination game and still be sloppy with the ball? Like
22.
That's what I mean. Is there's certain things, like if you tell me, hey, Bunk, you're way too long-winded and you need to tighten up your questions, and then we go into an interview and right during the interview I do my long-winded, crappy questions, you got to wonder if I'm committed to the game. You got to wonder if I'm listening to you. So if I'm Ime Udoka and I just told my team, hey, we got to take care of the basketball, and then you go to an elimination game, you give up the ball 22 times, I'm going, well, this has to be something, right? Like, there's got to be – you're right, Blake. If you're looking at the grand scheme of things, they're not all of a sudden in the Charlotte Hornets shoes, right? Like, MJ and the Hornets fans are going, yeah, we'll take those guys. We'll take these problems happily. Please, sign us up for these problems. But this is about – when we talk about championship windows and how much a team could win and projecting forward, what the new NBA landscape is going to look like. Because one of the cool things about the series was, hey, the Warriors are the old guard, but what's going to happen as they age out to the NBA as it's kind of more of an open landscape? Are these guys going to take over? And there was a lack of seriousness to that game that Boston had that made me feel a little less confident. Like, oh, all of a sudden I'm thinking about things like, you guys beat the Bucks without Chris Middleton. And if Chris Middleton was there – do you even matter? Are we even having this conversation? What happens next year when Joel Embiid asks to be traded to the Miami Heat and, you know, him and Jimmy Butler are running South Beach together? No, but seriously, the Miami Heat are going to make a big splashy move.
Look, you let the Heat take you to 7, and Jimmy Butler was the only player in that series.
Yeah.
Like,
Hero was
no
hurt.
Disrespect
Lowry
to our
hurt.
Guy Kyle and some of the other guys who were banged up, but, like, that was it. That was a Jimmy Butler series. And you let him take you to 7. I haven't really lost confidence in Boston's players individually, but in terms of windows, Miami might be at the end of their kind of super competitive window unless they adjust things here, but Milwaukee's going to be back. Giannis isn't going anywhere. He's still one of the best players in the world. Philly is, at least on paper, going to be dangerous. The Raptors will at least be annoying. Cleveland's getting better. Brooklyn, they were a joke this year, but they still have Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. Like, it's not like they're going to be an easy out anytime soon. And you have to look at all that if you're Boston. And I don't know, maybe there was a little bit of a complacency of like, we're young, we're on the rise, we'll be back here. But that's not a given. And you should have felt a greater urgency after getting bounced in the conference finals a couple times with this same group. So it was pretty disappointing.
Yeah, it was, to the point where
I want a game seven too. So it's disappointing from that perspective as well.
We all wanted a game seven. Everybody loves a game seven. But I will say this, is that it was such a bad performance that we're leading with it as our top like discussion before discussing the Warriors' brilliance, excellence, Steph Curry, all these things. Because like Sam brought up the Steph Curry ringer, the ring finger point. This guy added those two words together. But it felt hollow in the moment because it was such a beatdown, right? When you're bullying somebody, no one wants to see the bully go, like, see me beating up this kid?
Well, it's also, I say this all the time, like, to wrestling brain, is like, if you bury your opponent, then it's, who cares? You beat jabroni opponent. If you put your opponent over on your way to beating them, it looks more impressive. You know, I still think in the, like, going six and a couple of those games being really competitive, you're still there. But yeah, it didn't feel like Golden State was doing, like, the second half, they're just kind of like cruising to the title.
No, they were in cruise control. This, what I'm saying is not that the championship, them beating Boston, is not like a really awesome accomplishment. I just mean that in the moment, it didn't feel like anyone was locked in or thinking about the Warriors or watching this game with any engagement, because it was a blowout from the first quarter basically onwards, right? Like, it was done.
Who's going to say what after the game?
Exactly.
And let's make sure Steph actually gets the MVP and they don't Iguodala this again. And
so in a weird way, it just felt like Boston robbed Golden State of their moment by not showing up. Like, that's the disappointment level I have in Boston, is they quit so hard, they no-showed so hard, that it was hard to, like, embrace the Warriors narratives and discussing the Warriors stuff. By the way, Wiggins, when he finally got the mic, I went, okay, let's hear it, and they blew it. He, like, what the hell was that?
I mean, he's something. Not a good promo guy anyway.
No, but
did at least appreciate that he seemed to be genuinely overcome at the moment.
Like,
he kept not answering the question and drifting off, and then, like, would just come back and have a big smile on his face when he tried to, like he lost his thread and he's trying to come back and answer the question. And then he just ends up with a big smile on his face. It was great. Also, your boy GP2, JD, just having like monster plus minuses through this entire series. Before we close out the segment, our guy GP2, we knew. Did you see him with his dad celebrating?
Yeah, I did. Trust me. It was I feel as though I'm part of the family.
Did Bunkus see that?
So I saw it.
He was dreaming of that this morning when he was in the...
Buddy, I feel so close to the Peyton family. It's what are these relationships called, Blake? Where it's like
parasocial.
Parasocial relationship. I have such a strong parasocial relationship that when Gary Payton wore the T-shirt, and he was, I was like, oh, so we're getting shirts? Like, our family's getting shirts? You know, like, oh, when do I get mine, Gary? Like, where? How are we getting our shirts? Is it for the whole family? Is it for the whole clan? Exactly.
How many Canadians have won titles, boys, just to go back to Wiggins?
Well,
I feel like it has, the list can't be very long.
Corey's got one, Tristan's got one, Rick Fox has one, Boucher has one.
Bill Wennington. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There was Joel guy on the Lakers, Bill Spreck.
Bill Spreck. That doesn't count, Blake.
I'm just saying, he's Canadian. Rick Fox would have won some with the Lakers as well.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I'm feeling like it should have been a bigger deal that he was. I just feel like it hasn't been that big of a deal the whole
I'll
way
say
through.
This. I know he is the
it's
most
a complicated relationship, but
short of Tristan on the Cavs, he is, and you could make the argument between them, the most important Canadian to a championship.
For sure.
100%. We got to take a break. We'll come back. We'll do the Wake and Rake. We'll talk more about this on the other side. It's the Fan Morning Show. JD, Blake, and Sam McKee. Sports 5.9 of the Fan.
Smart takes on the biggest stories in sports. The Fan Drive Time with Ben Ennis and Stephen Brunt. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sportsnet 590. The Fan.
Wake up!
Now it's time for Wake and Rake.
You could be raking in the dough with your kind of back.
Show me the money!
With JD, Blake, and Ailish.
Wake up, you piece of shit.
It's time for the Wake and Rake, brought to you by Unibet. Crazy about the odds. And again, it's Blake Murphy, and this insider has been brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. Blake Murphy with us for the Wake and Rake. So tons of things to go over, tons of things to cover. I'm going to start with the Blue Jays, because, boy, yesterday sucked, man.
Yeah, like, it sucked.
Yeah, like, it was quite an embarrassing loss for the Jays. Just awful, nothing redeemable. That was your bad? Yeah, that's right. This is your bad indeed. Yeah.
Sorry.
So, yeah, you just like, yeah, you don't need to say it on air, buddy. welcome to the show. That's why, again, you're behind the glass. like, you know, it's like they tell you when you're in a band is that if you make a mistake, just keep playing. Don't stop and acknowledge a mistake, because most people don't know. You just, you know, blew that cardinal symbol. That's cool. so the Jays yesterday, it's just awful. But, Blake, we got to ask you before we move into the line, what's your concern index with Kevin Gausman right now?
3.5 out of 5. It would be
that's high. You said 3.5, I forgot the concern index is out of 5. And I went, wow, Blake is underselling this. Okay.
I don't think that there is I'm not as concerned about like tipping or anything like that. I'm concerned that every time out lately, it's been a different issue with the splitter. So yesterday it was the spin rate being way down and he can't locate it left to right in the zone. And before that, it was sequencing. And before that, it was maybe tipping. And then there was the one start where he couldn't get it down in the zone or below the zone. It was too obvious when it was a fastball coming based on location. So I just think he's going through it a little bit right now. And I don't know if you guys heard those post-game comments, but he was really hard on himself after that game. And that, to me, suggests a guy who's pretty frustrated and is trying to tweak some stuff and just can't find it right now. And that... Kevin Gausman can be an okay pitcher with that splitter being just a decent pitch, but you're only getting, like, we saw what Kevin Gausman looks like when that's the best pitch in baseball. Yeah. And the Jays need him to get back to that. It's not a fair bar, but that's where the bar is.
No, that is, well, it isn't a fair bar if you're a rookie pitcher, you're on some kind of a cheap deal, but no, they gave him over $100 million, so he's expected to pitch that way. I'll say this, is yesterday I had this thought, which is not a comfortable thought. Why did people not want to re-sign Robbie Ray? It was because it was a blip in the pan. Like, there was a question about whether it was sustainable. Sure. But what was the main argument? It was, well, what happens if one of the pitches drops off a little bit when you're only a two-pitch guy? And that's what we're seeing with Gausman. And it hit me like a ton of bricks going, oh, right. There's no backup plan. It's not good when, Sammy, you mentioned it earlier, when he goes to a different pitch, when he goes, oh, actually, I'm going to try this, and everyone in the stadium goes, no, man, you don't have that pitch. So it's just, it's a little scary when you're relying on only one thing to have success, and you realize that your margin for error is so thin. He was getting hit hard. Like, I'm up in that TD comfort zone. It was uncomfortable watching that guy not be able to get outs against one of the crappiest teams in all of baseball.
Yeah, he was, the mound was the discomfort zone is what you're going for there.
Yeah, it was. The mound, it was.
And yeah, one of the things you hope for in the Ray-Gausman comparison is that if Ray's velocity goes, you can't get the velocity back once it goes. Yeah. Gausman can maybe get the grip back, the spin back, the location back. That's an easier thing, I think, to massage start to start. It just, I don't know, right now it feels like he's plugging one hole start to start and it opens up another. And it's like, okay, well, I gotta focus on getting this down more in the zone. And then because of that, the spin's not there. Or you know, I gotta focus more on my tunneling so that it's not giving it away. And I'm trying to keep my hand from going down on top of the ball as early in my release. And then it's like, okay, well, then you can't locate it nearly as well, and you're tailing off to the arm side every time. Like, it just, it feels like you're plugging one hole and opening up another start to start. So, man, it would be nice to see him have a good one next week.
I'm a full-on panic. I'm full-on 5 out of 5 panic mode.
Yeah.
I also don't think I would care as much if you didn't also have Kikuchi going through it and Ross Stripling in the rotation. And again, Ross Stripling's been awesome, but they're not going to let him see this Yankees team a third time through the order tonight. So you're also dealing with, you now have two guys who are question marks start to start in terms of taxing your bullpen, and one guy who you know is probably going to tax your bullpen. No pressure, Alek Manoah. You got to give them 7 or 8 every time out right now.
And you got to win that Alek Manoah game. Okay, so a couple things with this Yankees series tonight, and we'll get into the, again, the Jays, the total is 9, so Unibet is expecting runs. They're saying, well, we don't know, Jordan Montgomery, Ross Stripling tonight.
Are you surprised that, so this big game is basically a pick 'em. The Jays are minus 104, the Yankees are minus 113, so a very slight lean on the books to the Yankees. Are you surprised it's that close in a Stripling versus Montgomery matchup?
Yeah, I am, especially given it's just this is how sports books operate. Is if you give too much value to the Yankees, that people are going to hammer the Jays because they can beat this team, right? So I understand the line, but I would say that I was a little surprised. I thought we were going to open this one, given that it's Ross Stripling. I thought this was going to be a little bit more like Yankees minus 160 than it was Yankees minus 113. So I actually do think that there's value more on the Yankees here, considering that like they have the better pitcher on the mound, they're the better baseball team.
They had a guy do a good in winning version of Jeremy Beasley last night, come up from the minors, give you 3 2/3 out of the bullpen in a tight game and pitch well, get DFA'd immediately after, but you get that win and you come into Toronto with a rested bullpen.
So the Jays, by the way, speaking of rested bullpen, it was notable to me yesterday that the Jays didn't use Trent Thornton in a mop-up game for the first time ever, because guess what? Trent Thornton's actually important to them now. Yeah. He's going
to
come in.
Beasley and or Gage are headed to AAA today. Casey Lawrence is in Toronto. He hasn't been activated yet, but he got pulled from his start last night in Buffalo so that he can be here for depth.
So if you're like me and you bought a little Trent Thornton stock over the last couple of weeks, then tonight is the night where you find out whether or not your investment was worth it or you bought a horrible, horrible stock. Because he's going to get a chance. He's going to be the bridge. He's going to be the Ross Stripling tonight against a good baseball team. And I would say that if you were betting on this game, it's a little spooky knowing that you need Ross Stripling to go twice through the order, and then you're going to end up getting probably 2 innings of Trent Thornton in this game in order to win. And so I would just say that remember this as we're doing it all. It's like, which Trent Thornton do you think we're getting should influence the way that you're betting
Funkus,
this game?
If I was your financial advisor, I'd be like, you know, this stock, I would be looking at selling this right now.
Buddy,
the volatility in the market coming up here, the New York Yankees, I would be considering selling my Trent Thornton stock heading into tonight.
My real-life financial advisor is going to look at my portfolio after these last couple of weeks and go like, hey, what so what are you going to do? You're going to work till you die, huh?
Buddy, we're in sports media. Already the plans are in place. Once you're done in the chair, you just throw you and the chair in the dumpster all over.
My financial advisor now is going to go, hey, so what's your side hustle, buddy? Because you got to have a different strategy. It's gone. Blue Jays, again, tonight, the Ross Stripling thing, that's going to go down. The other consideration in this baseball game that I wanted to just discuss from a narrative standpoint is, do you guys think that the division's already out of reach? Like, do you care about winning these games in terms of catching the Yankees, or do you think that's already kind of done? Because, like, your argument for betting the Jays or why it's closer could be, if you were spinning the narrative side of this, is like, oh, well, the Jays need these games, so they're going to treat these games a little differently, considering that they need these games to catch the Yankees in the standings.
Guess what? The Yankees treated last night's game against Tampa Bay, who's also in the mix there, like they needed these weekend games against the Jays. So I think that's I think if you lost two of three in this weekend, you're basically putting it behind. If you sweep this series, it's doable still. You have 10 games left against the Yankees, 7 after this weekend. You control a little bit of your own fate here.
10 games back, though. Boy, like.
Yes, I know. But there's also 100 games left in the season.
Yeah. Yeah, but you know what else, though? This is the actual number. That when you pull up the standings, I go, all right, you know, 10 games back is not a comfortable, it's the TD discomfort zone. But the real TD discomfort zone is that the Yankees have a run differential of...
I know.
A million?
131. Plus yeah. 131. The Blue Jays plus 36. There's a 100 run differential between these two teams, and it's June. I think we just might have to accept that the Yankees are... actually the better baseball team. Baseball, anybody can win. You get into a playoff series, of course the Jays could beat them. But yeah, I would say that there's no part of me that is going to be upset about losing the division today or tomorrow or whatever, because I feel like that's already done. That's already...
The standings are a no fun zone right now.
No.
I always look at whenever the Jays win, I'm like, oh, I'll just have a check to see how the old standings look. It's like, oh, still 10 games back because the Yankees never lose. Like, what are they, 31 games above 500 in June? Like, what the hell? I didn't expect them to suck like everybody, because there were some they might suck narratives early in the year. Yeah, no. People were like, I didn't expect
you, but yeah, okay. Yeah.
I never said they would be this. I didn't think they were going to be horrible, but. Having them be historically great is not something I anticipated, and it's over. It's over. The division is absolutely over.
So it's way too early in the season for playoff odds, but here, just to give you an idea of how out of reach it's gotten already, the Jays were the favorites in the AL East by Fangraphs win probabilities heading into the season. They now have just a 10% chance of winning the division, 86% chance of winning that wild card spot, so that's cool. There's only like a 3% statistical chance they don't make the playoffs, given how they've played and where they are. But you are about 8.5 times more likely to be in that wild card spot than the division at this stage.
But what I'm horrible with pace numbers. But what are they on? They're on like a 93, 94 win pace, right? Like they're playing great baseball. It's just the team above them's on like a 120 win pace.
Exactly. Yeah, they're just breaking the what we thought was going to be possible in this division.
Yeah, every good 120, team in the American 121 League. Win pace for the Yankees. So they're on pace to win the division by 26 games.
So
in a division that might have four playoff teams.
Yeah, no, it's truly outrageous what they're doing. They're just unbelievably good. They've got all the starters, a bullpen that's dealt with injuries and still manages to find incredible bullpen arms. Like, they had Chapman be in the crapper. They lost our buddy Chad. They've found ways to just... that's the best sign of a great team is when you're deep. They've also had a ton of injuries this year too. Like, they lost Stanton for a while, they lost Gallo for a while. It doesn't matter. They're just a wrecking ball. They signed Matt Carpenter off the streets. Anybody could have had him. He's got like six bombs already.
He's been a stud for them.
He's hitting Yankee Stadium bombs. Like, he looks like he was built for that place. Anyway, it's just they're infuriating. Okay, so rapid fire, because I want to get through golf, hockey, and our best bets. So, quick thought on the golf, because it's U.S. Open weekend. I actually think Rory McIlroy is having a moment right now. I think that he's locked in. I think he cares about golf, and he didn't before. He cares about golf again. He's out of his head because he's just focusing on the game. This whole thing with the LIV tournament has turned him into the face of morality for the PGA.
He's now Batman.
He's Batman. He's vengeance. And so today on Unibet, my favorite bet of the day is you can bet him heads up against people. You can get a minus 186 against Matsuyama, Dunzo. You can get a minus 134 against Xander Schauffele, Dunzo.
Both excellent bets.
Yeah.
As resident golf guy.
Yeah, here. That's what I'm coming to you is that you think these are smart bets? Because I kind of think that...
Rory's shaky in second rounds of majors. Like,
yes, he is.
It's okay, shaky. Like, and the conditions today are going to be incredibly tough. There was supposed to be some rain blowing through the area. Apparently it missed the course, but it's still super windy. It's warm. It's drying that place out. It's going to be incredibly, incredibly hard today. Fast greens. Rory's putting's not great. If we're truly believing in the vengeance Rory, Batman Rory theory, and he's maybe a different guy, Today's the day. But, like, he could go out there and shoot a 71 or a 72, be a couple over, and still win his matchup. It's going to be really, really tough. So it's fun to root for Rory right now. He's, like, I'm a Rory hater, and I'm even rooting for him right now because he's, like, the face of the PGA Tour.
Yeah, now you can't because Rory's the face of the PGA Tour, and his most famous shot in Canada is McKee is in the background.
I'm hanging in his back pocket. Yeah, I literally got my hands in his back pocket.
Guy scammed his way behind the ropes. Guy scammed his way.
Hits him with a Volkswagen.
Yeah, guy scammed his way.
Happy lookout, eh?
Yeah, exactly. I'm surprised you didn't go full, Happy Gilmore on him, like, just like chirping him throughout his last round at the Open because you are.
Poor Xander, by the way, if you play this bet, seems like a nice enough guy. No, you're the Penguin now. No, you're the Joker. Rory has Xander, to avenge against
you. I am not a Xander guy. I am very on the record as not a Xander guy. So, this is
the grudge at the Masters for him when he hit it in the water on 16 after Matsuyama gave him the open door. I'll always hold that grudge. By the way, Canadian was leading at the U.S. Open.
Hadwin's
been passed since some guy named Duffy, and I watch golf every weekend. I've legitimately never heard of the guy. Maybe he's a qualifier, but Hadwin, great round, and you can still get him on Unibet at 25-1, and he's one off the lead. Maybe not going to win, but fun to root for a Canadian. So if you want to have a little bit of a patriotic bet, look at him there.
Golf leaderboards, though, are always like how I actually, speaking of the stock market earlier, is like once you hear about it, it's already done. You know, like if someone's like, oh, people are investing in this, it's like you already missed it. And that's how I feel about golf bets, where it's like what was Hadwin before the tournament started? Probably over, like he was probably had astronomical odds. And so now if you're buying it at 25-1, I don't really love that one. But is there any other bets, Sammy, that you like in terms of right now that's on the board golf-wise? Because otherwise we'll move on. I gotta tell you, you're muted again. You're having a tough block. You're disconnected or you're muted.
See, what he's doing right now is killing my joke earlier that this is why he's behind the glass, because he's messing up all the behind the glass stuff now too.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it's like this is why you're on the streets.
I turned off my microphone to cough and I immediately forgot that I turned it off. So
can we call Ailish in for these last 4 minutes or something? Like, what's going on?
We'll take a hungover Ailish over this.
I said before the tournament to bet the mortgage on Phil missing the cut, and it looks like the divorcee dad back in the bar is going to miss the cut. Buddy, he looked awful yesterday. Holy crap.
Okay, I got to quickly say this, then we'll move on to the hockey. This is 1 second on Phil. When I had no idea that he was going to be at the US Open, and when he started doing like the media availability stuff, wearing the all black and having like the look that he's got going on right now, I was... What are we doing here, Phil? Whose idea was this? Did the Saudis tell you had to do this? And you were surprised that it ended up... It's just... Yeah, he looks like a villain. He is the villain. I don't know what he is doing.
He has to play the U.S. Open. He always has to play the U.S. Open because it's the only one for the Grand Slam.
Yeah,
he has to get into it to potentially... He won a major last year. That's why he played it. That's why he plays it. But
I just wasn't expecting it. I just thought maybe there was a chance that he wasn't there with all the drama, with all the things, because it wasn't a guarantee that he was going to play this tournament like a month ago. And it was just very sudden for a casual like me to all of a sudden see Phil Mickelson on the TV with the man in black outfit that he was rocking with the hair the way that it is. It's just a tough look for Philly. So moving onward. This weekend we've got ourselves some Stanley Cup Finals. Quickly, do you guys have any betting lean here in terms of the way that you want to do this? And then just like, that's it. Is it either of your best bet for the weekend?
No.
Not best bet, no. I would expect a better performance from Tampa Bay. They didn't handle Colorado's forecheck well at all. They didn't get anything going passing out of their zone. I'd imagine they have some adjustments in terms of how they try to tilt the ice back the other way. It's not going to get it done with only 23 shots. So I'm going to look to see if some of the Tampa Bay individual shot totals have overcorrected to that 23 shot total from last one. But that's the only feel I have, is we'll get a more aggressive Lightning team.
Yeah, that's the way I think about it too.
I think if I was going to bet it, I'm on Unibet right now. If you parlay the Lightning and the under, it's +320. feel like if they're going to win, it's going to be a tight, lock-it-down game. Vasilevskiy plays well. They kind of have you know, that little bit of an adjustment period where they win a 2-1 game or a 3-2 game. The total's 6. So if I was going to bet it, I would probably parlay them with the under.
Yeah. Lightning plus 125, I feel like is good value. I'm on that,
That's
too.
That's great value.
I like that, too. Especially since I put money on Steven Stamkos' future, and I'm going to be trying to influence that with all of
our guests. For Conn Smythe?
Hey, do you think that Steven Stamkos, this is his moment? Yeah.
If they win, I think he is Conn Smythe.
Yeah, I think so. I hope so, because I have money on it. Okay, so best bet time. I have the... I've been making money on the same thing over and over and over again, and that is the Detroit Tigers and unders. And I have missed one, I think, in the last week. But ultimately, I've got Blake Sky, John Gray, who he influenced the Texas Rangers in signing because he's got a buddy in the front office. He loved John Gray. Now that guy hates Blake because he's got an ERA of 5. That guy doesn't pick up Blake's calls anymore. He's not watching the fast breakdown. He's over it. He's furious with Blake. He's like, I vouched for you. But I still like John Gray against this Tigers team. They're awful. Tarek Skubal's on the mound. It's plus money. It's plus 115 for under 3.5. So if you want to wait a little bit and see if it goes to 4.5, maybe you can do that. But I'll go nuts and I'll say under 3.5 first 5. Tigers and Texas Rangers. Blake.
Yeah, I'm going similar approach, but I'm going White Sox Astros under 4.5, 5-inning line. It's Giolito versus Valdez. The White Sox hit lefties really well, but there is, as far as pitcher versus lineup data goes, Giolito and Valdez have really large samples against these oppositions and have pitched really, really well against the opposing teams. I also just don't know if I believe the White Sox has quite that good an offense against left-handed pitching, and Giolito Valdez at 4.5 is on the better value end, I think.
Okay, Sam, best bet.
I lied to the audience. Best bet is definitely Lightning and the under. Once I saw the number when I parlayed it, I love that number for a single game. And if they win, it's going to be a low-scoring banger. So, give me the Lightning to win and under 6 on the goal total is my best bet for the weekend.
Friday is always a little bit of a cheat game. So it looks like we're stay away from the Blue Jays. I like the Tigers because it's Tarek Skubal. He had a bad start. Now I expect him to bounce back. I don't expect 2 in a row. By the way, I also sneaky think that Robbie Ray is going to be good tonight just because narrative-wise, it makes sense that we all buried him, made fun of him, trashed him, and then Gausman has a bad start, and then we go, oh, right, this is what happens. Anyways, we got to run.
Sammy, do you have anything for tonight specifically? I know that's a good Saturday best bet, but something we could throw in the parlay for today. You like either of those Rory lines or anything like that?
Yeah, sure. Throw a Rory line in there to beat Xander.
Sure.
Yeah, I like that. That's a good one. All right, so that's your Wake and Rake today. Rory to beat Xander. I am rolling with Tarek Skubal and John Gray with the under, Blake Sky, and Blake Murphy is going back to his White Sox where he rocks the hat. He backs the White Sox.
I'm there next weekend going to a White Sox game. Yeah. Let's go.
Framber Valdez, let's go. All right, that's your Wake and Rake for today. For J.D. Bunkus, Blake Murphy, and Sam McKee, we will see you on Monday. Have yourselves a weekend, folks.